Hello and welcome to episode 7 of the Free From Mummies podcast. In this episode we are joined by Emily from The Fox and the Moon Sleep. Emily is a sleep consultant who helps parents with sleep. I've got to be completely honest and say that I am totally unqualified to talk on the subject of sleep. Three children, none of them sleep, and kind of my motto has always been allergy babies don't sleep. So I don't know if that resonates with anyone listening, but there is so much fantastic advice in this episode. I need to go back and listen to it many, many times again myself. Emily is an absolute wealth of knowledge, and the support that she offers on her Instagram page is fantastic. So I really do urge anyone to go and check her out. So grab yourself a drink and get comfy, and we hope that you enjoy this episode.
We're really excited to have Emily tonight. Emily's mummy, you are Lord Henry and founder of Fox and the Moon Infant Sleep. I can personally attest to Emily's skills as well, because she got us from multiple wake-ups every night to learning that Quill could actually sleep for the night, which was incredible. So yeah, thanks. And it was done so gently as well. It felt like little nudges rather than like actual training. So thank you for coming along tonight, Emily.
That's okay, thanks for having me.
I thought if we just started by asking a bit about why you set it up and your journey into motherhood, if that's okay.
How long have you got though? So I ultimately set this up because initially it was because I was fascinated with children's sleep, and I kind of was hurtled into motherhood with Arthur. I think I was one of those first-time pregnant women that was just like, this baby's not coming in, it's not coming out. It's here, like, yeah, I've got a stomach, I can feel it, but it's not coming out. It's just going to stay there forever. And then I had a horrendous labour experience with him, and then it ended up with an emergency section. Mm. And he was the biggest baby you've ever seen in your life.
He was
9, 12.
Oh, wow.
I know, and his head was probably 9 pounds.
Yeah.
His body was 12.
My children.
Yeah, massive head. So he, I'd been labouring for about 3 days, and then literally as soon as he was born, I was so pumped full of adrenaline, which we all are when we've given birth. Mm-hmm. I just didn't sleep. So by the time I got home, I was really struggling to feed him. It had been 5 days, and I think I probably had about 3 hours sleep in those 5 days. Yeah. And then I developed postnatal psychosis. So hallucinating. And it was purely, well, it's since been like, after talking about it with different people, it would seem it's sleep deprivation triggered.
Wow.
But I, yeah, really struggled first year of parenthood, very, very anxious, very depressed, very paranoid. And then Arthur got bronchiolitis at 4 months on his first Christmas Eve, and we were in hospital for his first Christmas. He was extremely unwell, and that's gone on to then scar his lungs, and he's now got an asthma diagnosis. I was so worried about Arthur all of the time because of his asthma, that I just decided that I could not have another baby, because I couldn't worry for another baby as much as I worry about him. And also my mental health, like, I just thought, I can't do it. Anyway, I decided to get a lot of help. I did the Anna Mather Reframe and Anxiety course, and I got some private therapy. Mm-hmm. And then we decided that we were going to try and have another baby. Mm-hmm. I fell pregnant very quickly, but I had hyperemesis and was very sick, very, very sick.
That must be so hard with having a little one.
Yeah. But the thing with having that is that if you have anxiety, it's a very similar feeling. Like, it's because, you know, when you're anxious and you don't want to eat and you don't really want to drink, you don't, and you feel nauseous because you've not eaten.
Yeah. It's like having that.
Yeah. It's, and then, but I think because I have been anxious in the past and it's a similar feeling, I couldn't differentiate between one that feeling. Like, yeah. It was a horrible pregnancy. And I remember having a bit of a massive mental breakdown episode when I was about 22 weeks. We were on holiday, which was brilliant timing. And that was another long story in itself. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Henry was born with the, born at 32 weeks. And spent some time in NICU with his skin condition and things. And I think lockdown hit and I thought, I was so tired. And I thought, I can't sleep train this child. Is that the only way? And then that's when I started to become really interested in sleep again. And like, I was always that friend that people would come to and be like, oh, what did you, like, how have you got them into a routine and things? Because I just read so much and I felt really in control. Anyway, I decided that during lockdown I was going to train to help, with a view to help mothers and fathers with their mental health after becoming parents. Through helping them follow their instincts in parenting and get better sleep. Just teach people about sleep, because that's what's not the norm. Like, it's all of it is very much, this is what needs to happen, a baby needs to self-settle and that's it, and then they'll sleep through. And there's no emphasis on correct sleep education anywhere. Mm-hmm. Like, even within the NHS, it's just non-existent. I thought I'll sneak on in there and see what happens. I've not looked back. It's been brilliant.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
it's incredible that you've managed to do all of that considering what you guys have been through. Good God. And your openness with like mental health will resonate with so many like allergy parents, because obviously, you know, it's quite a traumatic thing on that side of things, and the NICU side as well.
Wow. Yeah.
So, had a journey and a half.
Yeah. I think I still think like what has actually happened in the last 2.5 years, forgetting, I know like poor old Arthur has had a rough time, but he's been completely trumped by his brother.
Yeah.
And I think, has this actually happened? Like, sometimes I just sit there and be like, what is actually happening?
Yeah. Like, I feel like that with my boys as well.
Yeah.
Like, if you're my only one, then I would be completely different with you, but because your brother kind of... you know, like you say, trumps you.
Yeah.
Like, you kind of just have to deal with what you've got going on.
Yeah.
To just put it by.
I know, it's really, it's very, very strange, isn't it? And like when you become the expert, or you feel like, well, you are the expert of your child, but I mean, that certain allergy or that certain condition, you feel like there isn't anything you don't know about it. And it's almost a bit like you get a bit defensive about things when people will say, well, have you tried that? And you're like, have you tried not telling me? I think
it comes from like control as well, because I know like early days for me I felt so out of control. So it made me want to get more knowledge about things, because I felt, and still to this day I think this is a big reason why I do this podcast with you, Kate, as well. It like helps me feel a bit more in control when things happen.
Definitely. I think that's parenting as well in general. I feel like we, especially women who, and I say women because we have that responsibility of growing the children and birthing them and feeding them, if that's what we're doing. And we couldn't be more out of control when we become parents. We cannot control anything that's going on. And that's why people get obsessed with sleep, I think. People are desperate to claw that back. Like, if I can get this child to nap at 10, nap at 12, nap at 2, nap at 4, and go to bed at 7 and sleep through till 7, like, life will be brilliant. Exactly.
I remember just setting targets, like, when he gets to this point, he'll be sleeping and then it'll be fine and he'll be sane again.
And when your child's diagnosed with an illness or an allergy or, what, you know, a health issue, you... you have to, and if you're sleep deprived as well, especially like allergy babies don't sleep well. Children with skin issues don't sleep well.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, when is that going to get better? And yeah. And sometimes just feeling like you know that it's perhaps never going to be perfect is better than trying to achieve these goals that are completely unobtainable by sleep training and all of these things.
So is that your kind of goal now, is to help people have a realistic expectation as to what's normal?
Yes, a realistic expectation of what's normal, but also help people understand that the sleep industry is not regulated. So anybody could just set up a sleep consultancy tomorrow and give advice out. Like, yeah. And there are people out there that are making millions and millions and millions of pounds off women that are very mentally unwell and feel like their only option is to do extinction, cry it out, or control crying. And there's books about it, and it's a pandemic. I feel like it is a mental health pandemic. Mm-hmm. The sleep industry is causing massive issues. And I think my goal is that sleep has to be looked at holistically. You have to look at everything that's going on. You have to look at a baby's feed. And then people will say, well, you need to stay in your lane and you can't be given advice that you're not trained to do. But, you know, if you're a good sleep coach, you'll know that something is causing the poor sleep and then can signpost that family on. And unfortunately, the funding and the knowledge isn't in the NHS. So you're never, ever going to get that level of care, so parents are having to pay for it, which is rubbish. It sucks, but unfortunately, you know, it works, and I don't really know. Sometimes I get so ahead of myself, and I'm like, everybody needs to know this now. Like, just calm down. Like, no, like the event.
Sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say the event that Faye and I did, we were both just getting so angry with each other. Like, and then there's this. And everyone's just like, okay, we've just come here for a few tips.
Jade, you and I said in the past as well that when you are awake all hours of the night, you're Googling looking for remedies, you'll pay any money and you'll kind of buy into anything that you come across. So like you say, with the people that perhaps aren't qualified or are giving out advice that's not kind of, I suppose, the holistic approach that you take. But if you're in that desperate time in the middle of the night, you will buy into that because, you know, you're looking for anyone, any help, you know.
Exactly.
So that's why we need to try and make sure that everyone can find you.
And I mean, obviously you could argue that, you know, I'm charging money to helping people, but I've obviously got to do that to make a living.
Yeah.
But then it's just clever things that other people do, or big sleep businesses do, that should be regulated, like sending marketing emails at 3 a.m. in the morning saying, oh, you can buy this course for £400. That shouldn't be happening. That's not okay.
Sure, you are really vulnerable at that 3 a.m.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And no mentioning no names, but the fact that a very big sleep consultant has signed a very big contract with a very big supermarket and is selling sleep guides for on special buy, that should give you a big clue. Which is not that, that's not okay. Because
I remember getting one like from there and before Quillborn, and then everything that said when he came, I was like, I'm doing it all wrong. Like, it's on me all the time.
Exactly. And the issue with that is that's good business. That's your, you are smashing being a business. However, there's no regulatory body that is analysing that information that you're giving out to A, make sure that it's safe, B, making sure that it's not going to do any damage to a child or a mother's or father's mental health or caregiver's mental health. And then you're selling it for half the price in one of the biggest supermarkets in the country and none of that information is regulated.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't make sense, because you wouldn't sell a food product that hasn't been tested and regulated and all, you know, that's up to standards, but then that can happen. It's very frightening.
Yeah, it's a crazy time, isn't it?
It is.
I like the passion it comes with.
Sorry, I don't
control. No, apologise for it. Nice. Like, I think that's, it's important. I got the same vibe with Faye as well, and her passion with, like, obviously, when we spoke to her last time as well, and she was saying about the NHS just lacking reflux services. It's just just not there as a list. It's so outdated now, isn't it?
It is.
They've got.
It is, and, yeah, there's a lot of controversy with that as well, and I think, unless you've had a reflux baby, you don't know how debilitating, how frightening, how serious it can be. And we're still suffering. I mean, Henry doesn't really suffer with actual regurgitation anymore, but the reason he had severe reflux to the point of aspiration and apneas and blue episodes is because he has a high palate and a tongue tie and a lip tie, yet was that never picked up on? Simple things that could have been done that were completely overlooked. And those simple procedures are, if they would have been done, would have saved the NHS thousands just on Henry. It's completely backwards. It's just,
it's really hard looking back, isn't it, and thinking, that could have been avoided from that. It's so frustrating when you look back over that journey.
I know.
Just to hope that someone learns something from your knowledge to prevent them going through it.
Definitely.
So Emily, why do you think that apart from the obvious question, why do allergy babies struggle so much with their sleep?
Because, well, the biggest thing is obviously that they're uncomfortable. However, if you are eradicating that allergy from the baby's environment, which is not always possible, obviously, then there shouldn't be that, you know, those symptoms should be a lot better, and sleep should come up better. So if a baby is, say, a red flag for me is if somebody comes to me and says my baby's waking hourly or less, hourly, I'm like, well, there's something going on there. And I'm sure, as you two know, like, babies are born with leaky guts. Like, they just they need that first couple of days of nutrients that obviously ideally breast milk, but more often than not formula. To help that gut not be leaky, for want of a better phrase. And then when children are exposed to antibiotics, or if they are, you know, high IgE levels in their blood, they are going to be, I mean, there's lots of different reasons why a child will have an allergy, but babies who have an allergy are generally very unsettled. They're diagnosed with colic. They have those witching hours that last for 12 hours of the day. That's not a witching hour.
You're witching.
They are uncomfortable. So a baby will always sleep when they are comfortable, because sleep is a normal physiological process that we are all capable of doing. And we do not need to teach a baby to sleep. A baby will sleep because that's what they're supposed to do. And if they're not sleeping, and it's dire, and they're very unsettled, there's a reason for that. And yet we are not listened to, I don't think, as mothers went. And the words, is this your first child? Or, that's all.
I've heard it, like, you do know babies are supposed to wake up in the night. Well, I don't even feel qualified to speak to you, Emily. None of mine, all three of mine have got allergies, and none of them have slept. They still, I mean, we're still, like you say, we still haven't got to the bottom of a lot of the things causing the waking. And my youngest is 15 months. She still sleeps in bed with me because she gets up so much in the night. No, she's up now. She's not. So there's just, you're right in what you're saying, like, from my experiences, it's because we've not got to the bottom of everything. There's still some stuff going on. But it's finding it and getting the support to find it.
Definitely. And I think the issue sometimes can be, You know, if you wouldn't go to a bog stand, oh, that's the wrong phrase. Like, I want to say generic sleep consultant with your children, you would want to seek somebody that's either been through that or that has a speciality, you know, understands it. The issue is, I think that when somebody like me, who's been through similar things, although, for different reasons and whatever it, you know, whatever it may be, I'm guilty sometimes of being like, well, that's what you know, really looking hard into what that will be, and kind of sometimes skipping the quick things. Like optimizing sleep hygiene. And I think sleep hygiene, the word sleep hygiene is bandied about a lot as well. And that all that means is what happens during the day to help that child sleep at night, and what's bedtime routine like, how many hours have they been awake for, what's being said at bedtime, what does their bedroom look like, all of those things. And that's what everybody should start with, whether you've got a baby with quite severe medical needs or not, and then you kind of work your way down. Things aren't improving, there's a reason for it, and it's not because a child can't self-soothe or self-settle. So that's why kind of a broad knowledge of things is good. But yeah, ultimately an allergy baby won't sleep because they can't.
That's part of the, I mean, I've had pressure from people to get babies, my babies, into a routine so that they sleep. But because Teddy's eczema has been so bad, you know, I've had 4-hourly inhalers that I have to sleep on for, and, you know, have to sleep in bed with them, and they're unsettled through reflux, silent reflux, you know, all of those things. And so I've never felt that it was fair on me or them to ever try and do any form of sleep training whatsoever. So I've literally followed the lead of the children and just kind of tended to their needs through the night and not put any pressure on any of us. And whether that's been the right decision or the wrong decision, I don't know, because, you know, they're 5, 3 and, you know, 1, and lucky if we get a solid block of sleep for any of us, you know. So obviously it doesn't work what I do, and I'm not saying that whatsoever, but that's just kind of like the way that I felt like I've had to deal with sleep really with my kids. It's like the only way that I could.
Yeah, it's hard when they're like in flare-ups. We can really see it now. So like I say, we came to you, Emily, a long time ago now, wasn't it? And what happened, because I was really like nervous about changes, because it's like, oh god, he's ill, or you know, he's had these things, I don't want to do anything. But you helped us recognize things that, you know, we could put into place and gentle. And then now we can see when he's ill or when so, you know, obviously we do get these good nights in between as well. So
we could definitely, you know, especially the silent reflux symptoms, like, and you know, it's always good to just speak to somebody that has worked with so many other families in your situation, you know, just to say like, oh, well, have you looked at that? And you might want to punch me in the face after I've said it, because that's probably the first thing you've thought of. But yeah, there's so, like, we should definitely have a chat, because I think, you know, even if we can just make things marginally better.
Because I mean, I mentioned it to the health, like, health assistant said to me at, like, the most recent check, you know, how's sleep? And I was like, you know, no better, no worse. And she said, okay, well, we can't help you until you've got all the tummy issues and all of that sorted. So I was like, okay, so we'll just keep on not sleeping then until, you know, I don't know when we're going to get to the bottom of it with her. But so, yeah, just unload all that. That's why I don't feel qualified to speak about sleep, other than to how bad, maybe people can learn from my errors. I don't know.
Yeah, I think this is the thing. I think you have to follow your instinct, and how can anyone be telling you to do something that's physically impossible to achieve when you ultimately have to care for your child's medical needs before anything else? And if they are happy children, then, and you're happy with the situation, yes, obviously you'd always benefit from a lot more sleep. But if you've got so much else, you know, on your plate, that if you feel relaxed with that, and that's the only thing,
really, that this is just, I mean, it's not gonna, it won't last forever.
That's
kind of what we're telling each other in the morning. We're just like, this won't last forever, will it?
That's how you get
them. When's it gonna end again?
No, we're happy. That we're there in the every night with us.
But there might be something, there might be a really small thing. Yes,
definitely, yeah.
And I think, but ultimately, yeah, I think sometimes, depending on the vibe I get from somebody, I'll say, are you ringing me because you feel pressured to?
Right, okay.
Or are you ringing me because you desperately need change? And if they say to me, everybody keeps telling me I need to do this, and this, I say, go away for a couple of weeks, think about it, what you want to do. Yeah. And then get back in contact with me, because those people are the ones that won't trust the process and will feel really nervous about it and actually don't want to change anything. Yeah. So they feel like they're just wasting money.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they don't need to change anything if they're happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's not a one size fit, is it? For
no.
At all.
Not
can I be cheeky and pick your brain, Emily, on clocks? Do you have any tips on like the whole clock change?
So what? Yeah. So this is happening with Henry as well. And what are we, a week on?
Yeah.
And we've just cracked it, and it's taken a week. So I am always in the camp of do nothing with clock change, because it will fry your brain trying to prepare for it to happen, and it never works. And if it does work, then it's probably a coincidence. So I tend to just say, just leave it and see what happens, because either nothing will happen or something bad will happen.
Yeah, we're just really early.
Yeah, we have been five-ish this week. So it depends on the age of the baby.
Yeah.
So for Quill, I think, what time is he waking up?
So about, I think we've had about 4:30, 4:45. Oh, jeez Louise.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, are you in the position to, are you with him all the time?
He's got nursery here and there, like two slots, but on the whole, we're like together.
Okay, great. So, I, for this age group, always say if they're waking at kind of 4:30, 4:45, at about 8 o'clock, go for a drive if they fall asleep in the car.
Right, okay.
And yes, it sounds ridiculous that you're having to make a trip at 8 o'clock in the morning, but I just, if you think that he'll just fall asleep in your arms or in bed or whatever, then great, do that. God, but I find that, yeah, exactly. So if he will have had less sleep than he's used to waking at that time. And also he'll have been awake, he'll have had enough time to build some sleep pressure between 4:30 and 8:00, or maybe you could maybe even leave it as late as 9:00, depending on how he is. Go for a drive and get him to have 30 minutes sleep, and then wake him up. He doesn't nap. Did you tell me that he doesn't really nap?
Yeah, he's kind of dropped it now, because he could easily go. And it's about 4:00 in the afternoon. He's asking to go to bed, and I'm like, dude, a bit early, mate.
Yeah. So I would. I think. You could either try that early morning. If he's absolutely not having it, then maybe try again before midday, maybe 10, 11 o'clock.
Right.
Go for a drive, and you could have an hour sleep.
Yeah.
And then do like a 6:30, 6:30 bedtime.
From that.
Because what will be happening is, if he's waking up at 4:30 and he's not going to bed till 6:00,
yeah,
6:30 without a nap, he is building a lot of cortisol in his blood. And adrenaline.
Right, that makes sense.
He'll be wired. Yeah. A very emotional, real, and obviously toddlers are in general, but even, you know, even more emotional, even harder to like downregulate, very stressed, or even the other end of the spectrum, really hyper and clumsy and all of that. So we need to be getting those cortisol levels down, and one day of doing a little nap in the car won't fix it. But consecutively, if you try that each day, it will come to the point where he'll then, one morning, whether it takes a week or 10 days, or even just 3 or 4 days, it depends, that he'll just wake at 5:30 or a normal time for him.
Yeah.
And then you'll be back to normal. But you need to be getting those levels down.
Because that ultimately makes so much sense.
Yeah. Ultimately he's down on sleep. Yeah. And it's becoming accumulative as the days go on. And that's exactly what's happened with Henry.
Yeah.
Is that he was for months and months and months, he was like a 6:00, 6:00 kid, six at night, and then wake at 6:00 in the morning. And then as he's got older, excuse me, he has obviously been a bit being able to stay awake for longer.
Yeah.
So I've been able to push his bedtime, and then he's kind of been going to bed around 7, and it's been great. Like, we've not been rushing, kind of putting him to bed. He's so tired. But then the clock's going back and putting back to 6:06 or 6:05 as it has been. So I was like, I left it and just thought, I'm not doing anything, I'll just follow his lead. And then I thought, maybe I should try like my own advice out. So I've been doing a little half an hour nap in the morning, and then his normal nap. I appreciate he's a bit younger than Quill and he's still napping. Yeah. But then tonight is the first night he's gone at like 7:15. Mm-hmm. And that, you'll just know, it kind of reset. But the clock changed.
Oh, why do they do it? It's such a bloody nightmare.
I know. There's this professor in sleep. He's amazing. He's called Matt Walker, Dr. Matt Walker. And he has written a book called Why We Sleep.
Right.
And I've just been reading it. And there is... Oh, he's done a Joe Rogan podcast as well. Listen to it.
I will. Dr. Matt Walker.
Yeah. Sorry, everyone's breaking up a little bit.
Yeah, same.
Oh, no.
Is it? A huge thanks to one of our group members who shared their tip with us. They said record everything. So take a food diary, write symptoms, keep a bit of a log, and have a list of safe foods that you can keep in one place and give out to people. So I found that personally really helpful, especially with grandparents or partners or whatever, just making it a simple way for everyone to know what's safe and what isn't. So thanks for that.
That sounds really interesting, Emily. Are you all right to tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, so Dr. Matt Walker has a book as well, which is called Why We Sleep, and that's really good to read. And I don't know whether like other people would find stuff like that interesting, because obviously I would. Yeah. But it is fascinating. And yeah, like the 8 hours of sleep and him saying that it doesn't matter if you feel like you are a low sleep need person. Like if you say, oh, I'm fine, I'm 4 hours sleep a night. Those people are never okay on 4 hours sleep a night. And yeah, the impact it has on you physically and mentally if you are consistently having less than 8 hours of sleep. So this whole mum brain, baby brain, and how foggy we feel when we become parents is very, it's explained, it's there, it's in research.
So it is real. It's like, have you,
have a full brain.
Yeah, and you can still use it now.
Oh, yeah. I saw a physio and she said, you should go to postnatal Pilates. And I said, oh, but the baby's like 9 months old, and she's like, you will be postnatal for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, really, I'm definitely going to be 25 years postnatal. Get me
Like, I think our sleep, and I don't know the research of this, but like, I know from experience and speaking to other people that when you become a parent, your sleep changes, not because you're up all the time. Obviously, that's why it's going to change, but even when they do sleep, you can be woken up at the slightest noise. You might sleep through like a car alarm or a lightning storm, but your child coughs. And you're like bolt up, right? And I've even had dreams before where somebody's been trying to wake me up to tell me that Arthur needs me or Henry needs me. And I've woken up with such like a start and then gone to check Arthur and he's needed his inhaler.
Wow. It's so mad, isn't
it? Yeah, and it's always when I've been in a hyper alert state. It's never like, you know, it's always when they are unwell. But I vividly remember being like shaken awake by my granddad in my dream, like, wake up, wake up. And I was like, oh my God, I better go and check. And he was struggling.
Oh, wow.
I know, crazy, isn't it?
That is amazing.
I know.
It's really sweet. I remember, mine's a little bit more odd, but I remember having a similar experience of when Quill was like tiny and Simon had taken him out of the room, and I woke up and I was breastfeeding a pillow.
Oh,
and I was like, oh my God. And
cutest thing I ever heard.
That is so common. The amount of people that I speak to that, and they'll say that they, and this is what happened with me with Arthur, and I thought I was going mental, was that he, I'd wake up and look for him in the duvet.
Yeah.
I'd be like lifting it up and be like trying to. And my friend said that she once got in such panic that she like looked under the duvet. She got under her bed to try and find the baby. And that's got to be sleep deprivation.
Yeah.
Massive trigger. Because we know what happens to our brains when we're sleep deprived. We know what stages of sleep it puts us in. It's very clever and it knows what to prioritize to keep you healthy mind-wise. Because when we're well rested, we should have our kind of phases of sleep should be quite similar. And generally we have our deepest sleep before midnight. And then that's why when children have like night terrors and things, it tends to be around then when they come out of their deepest stage of sleep.
Is that the same for like illness as well? Because I've always noticed that Quill's health tends to always go worse after midnight.
Yes, I think that must be simply because the brain puts us in, it's called NREM sleep, and it's made up of four stages. Yeah. And if you like imagine the four stages of being like four gears, if you're driving a car, like each gear is deeper sleep.
Right.
And then at the end of that fourth stage of sleep, we start to cycle into REM sleep, which is lighter and more like dream state. So if we're ill, that's when we're going to be more likely to wake and obviously show our symptoms more because our brain has taken us out of that deep kind of protective stage of sleep.
Makes a lot of sense that.
Yeah.
It was always like a conspiracy he would be, and he's still the same now. He'd sleep earlier before midnight, and then as soon as you get to sleep, that's when he'd be like reflux or coughing or whatever.
Just
after midnight time.
Oh,
it's
horrible, isn't it?
Sleep is certainly a challenge, isn't it? When
it really got health conditions.
Yeah. So coming on to that then, do you have any sort of advice or anything you would say to parents with children who have allergies?
So I think knowing what that allergy is, and I know that's a really stupid thing to say because, you know, you're going to want to know what the allergy is, but the reality of it is that some won't know, you know, what. And we know that, you know, the IgE, what they call the skin prick tests that can show up, they can be like false negative. And it's important to know that, you know, understand more about what's going on with your child's gut health when they've got an allergy. When did it start? When did the symptoms start? What kind of symptoms are they? Kind of do your research as well. And we cannot forget the importance of sleep hygiene. Children with allergies are going to be harder to get to sleep and get to relax because especially if they've got things like eczema or they're really uncomfortable, it's going to be harder to relax them, which is why sleep hygiene is even more important. So really being aware of how long they've been awake for and what impact that's going to have on their brains if they have been awake for a long time. We often get scaremongered into thinking that overtiredness is this massive thing and it's going to cause massive issues, and it's not. But when a child's consistently down on sleep, they're going to be more stressed. And when a child's more stressed, they're going to feel more pain. So just being aware of that and putting some things in place and focusing on relaxing and winding down kind of an hour before bed. And depending on the age of your child, I mean, it's sometimes you won't know. I've worked with so many families where the only symptom of an allergy they've got is poor sleep. And their stools are fine, they eat fine, they don't have any rashes, their immune system isn't down. They're generally healthy children, but they wake every hour at night. And it's only through like elimination diet and obviously going to see their GP, health visitor, and trialing elimination-free diets is the way that their sleep's improved.
Wow.
So especially if your child, I know it's not the same, but especially if your child's had a norovirus or gastroenteritis, so they've had a really bad stomach flu, at that point children can become really sensitive to lactose. So they can have like a temporary intolerance to lactose. And often what you'll find is you might get a child that has a stomach bug and they're being sick and they've got diarrhea, and then the sickness goes and their health seems to improve, but the diarrhea still happens, and they just tend to be a little bit uncomfortable and a bit crampy and a bit bloated. And that's generally because the gut's just not mended itself, and it's so leaky that it can't hold on to nutrients. And lactose, obviously, because of the sugar content, becomes quite an irritant for their stomach. So it doesn't always happen, but that's kind of, as someone that works holistically with sleep, that's something that's, although obviously I'm not a medical professional and I can't say to a family, eradicate dairy for the rest of the life, it'll be fine. But you can certainly say this might be contributing to what's going on, and it would be worth chatting to whoever about this. So just trialing things. Like, I think we're so easily led, I think, by healthcare professionals, and yes, they do an amazing job, and I wouldn't have my child if it weren't for them.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we have to trust our gut more than anything, above anything. And if something doesn't feel right and your child's still struggling, yet you're lacking answers, it's always good. And it's, I'm sure Faye said a lot of the same thing, that you just have to go back to basics with it.
Yeah.
And think, what could be causing this? And just not losing the importance of a good bedtime routine and understanding sleep a bit more. My wish for like every parent, you know, I wish that in NCT classes you just learn about sleep, like you learn about it and what you don't need to do and what you do need to do, and how an allergy baby might present itself. And they're not just a difficult baby, they're not just a baby that's going through the witching hour or tea time colic, whatever they want to call it. If you feel like something's not right, then it's probably not. And how to get that help. I think that's all people need, is the information to get that help and to know where to find it.
I think like a lot of people relate to that or be able to take something from it. So thank you, Emily.
No, it's okay. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for coming along tonight. If you do want to find out more information about Emily's services and all her helpful tips, because she shares a lot on Instagram, which is brilliant, so check it out. It's Fox and the Moon Infant Sleep. So, thank you very much, Emily.
Thank you, Emily. It's been absolutely amazing speaking to you.
No problem. Thanks for having me. It's been lovely speaking to you too.
A huge thanks to one of our group members who shared their tip with us. They said record everything. So take a food diary, write symptoms, keep a bit of a log, and have a list of safe foods that you can keep in one place and give out to people. So I found that personally really helpful, especially with grandparents or partners or whatever, just making it a simple way for everyone to know what's safe and what isn't. So thanks for that. Thanks so much, Emily from Fox and the Moon Infant Sleep, for joining Kate and I tonight. It was really interesting, and like I say, I worked with Emily and we had a great time with Quill, so I can highly recommend her. If you do want to find out more information, you can find her on Instagram at Fox and the Moon Infant Sleep. We'll also put her website in the show notes as well. If you have any feedback, we'd love to hear from you, so just drop us a DM on Instagram at the Free From Mummies Podcast, or email us at the Free From Mummies Podcast at gmail.com. We'll see you next time. Thanks.